You're listening to PX Pulse, a regular podcast bringing you fresh voices on critical issues facing HIV prevention research today. Welcome to PX Pulse. I'm Jean Barron. In this episode, AVAC's Manju Chitani-Gada talks with a researcher, a trial participant, and a leader in the microbicide field to take us through a discussion of what's next for the dapivirine ring. It's a silicone vaginal ring inserted monthly that slowly releases an antiretroviral drug called dapivirine to protect against HIV. Now under regulatory review, the ring could be the next major HIV prevention tool since oral PrEP was approved by the U.S. FDA in 2012. Data just released at the Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections suggests that women may use the ring at higher rates, and the protection it provides may be higher than shown in earlier studies. To understand these findings better and learn what's next in the regulatory process, Manju spoke with Zita Rosenberg, founder and CEO of the International Partnership for Microbicides, or IPM. Zita led the research and development for the ring as part of IPM's mission to make HIV prevention products for women.
So Zita, let's just get right to it. We know, we understand that there was some promising information shared at CROI recently on the interim results from the open label extension studies, Hope and Dream, on the dapivirine ring. So please tell us, what are the key takeaways from these findings? What do they tell us and what is still to come?
Sure. Well, as you might know, open label extension studies are studies that follow from phase three studies where women are randomized to either active or placebo drug. And in the open label studies, everyone gets the active drug. So everyone is now on the dapivirine vaginal ring. And we assumed when we started these open label studies that we might see greater adherence, greater use of the ring, because women would now know that it did work to prevent infection and that it was safe to use. And in the phase three studies, every month women are told, we don't know how safe this is in large numbers of women. We don't know if it works. And so many women may have chosen at that time not to use it for fear of side effects. And here, they know that it's safe, they know that it does reduce the risk of infection, and they know that if they chose so, they are on the active product. And so what we found in both of the studies is that indeed, women did use the ring more than they used it in the phase three trials. And when we tried to look to see whether they had a greater reduction of their risk of HIV, we found with a little modeling that yes, they do. In the phase three trials, we saw about a 30% reduction in risk, and in the open label extensions, greater than 50% reduction. And the modeling that had to be used was to come up with what would have been a result in the placebo group, because there was no placebo group. Mm-hmm. And you have to compare what you're seeing to something. And so we did modeling of the phase three data to come up with a comparison. So it's not perfect. So these are interim results, number one. So that's small numbers of women. So that has to be taken into consideration. Mm-hmm. And number two, there wasn't a control group that was happening at the same time. So we had to make some guesses. So hopefully with all of those caveats, we still will come up at the end of the day with the same finding that indeed it will reduce the risk of infection greater, especially if women use the ring more.
So when are we expecting the final results?
We won't get the final results until sometime in 2019. The trials will end the end of this year, and then it will take about 3 to 6 months for the final data to be available.
So Zita, you know, there's been some comparison to what you're seeing in the interim data to what we saw with IPREX.
And by the way, data from the IPREX study in 2014 showed a 44% reduction in HIV infection among those who used oral PrEP compared with a control group who got the placebo. And those percentages increased to 53% in the open label extension of IPREX.
Do you think that is a fair comparison? And are there any caveats we should keep in mind?
I think it's an absolutely fair comparison, and Jared Baton did a great job at CROI when he described what we had learned from the oral PrEP studies and when, because we really are in the early days of the ring. We are where the oral PrEP studies were right after the Iprexole. And it was before we found out the very high levels of protection that were seen in the United Kingdom and in France. And so we are at an earlier stage, but the data look very, very similar. So hopefully we will see something as good as oral PrEP. We really don't know. But even if we don't, seeing something for women that could be greater than 50% protective and maybe even as high as 75. You know, I don't think we would ever go and think that it would be 100% protective or 90% protective. But even seeing something that's lower for women who can't take a pill every day and for whom other prevention options just don't work, we think this would be a really important tool.
Do you think the key difference in the open label extension studies versus the phase three trials is the fact that women know they're not using an experimental product? Do you think that's the only reason that has led to increased adherence? Or are there other factors you think are important that have helped show better adherence?
I think that women can join, especially the HOPE study, they can join the study even if they don't want to use the ring. So we are taking away, in some ways, the incentive to join for medical care and having women say that they might want to use the ring, but to get other benefits of the trial. So this way, women can get the benefits of being in the study and can choose whether to use the ring or not. And we just ask that you tell us whether or not you're using the ring. And so I think in that regard, the women who chose to use the ring indeed are using it more. And I think that will be more like the real world. For women who decide they want to use a prevention product, they will be motivated to use it for the prevention itself.
So Zita, let's talk now about the pathway to access.
So the pathway to access has to start with regulatory approval. And it has to start with regulatory approval in each country that the vaginal ring should be marketed in, if approved. And so that requires a number of steps. First, a international regulatory agency like the European Medicines Agency. It requires WHO review and recommendations for use and pre-qualification. And then it requires every African country to agree that the product can be brought into their country. We also have to have already made sure that we have the manufacturing capacity. We have pretty well controlled because IPM knows who the manufacturer is and has worked with them for many, many years. But just having the product and having approval doesn't mean that it's actually going to get to the women where and when they need it. And so that requires looking at the whole supply chain, talking to healthcare providers, finding out where women want to and can more easily access the product, finding donors who are willing to pay for the product. So there are many, many steps in this chain. And we have a whole access plan that we've developed in cooperation and collaboration with Janssen Pharmaceuticals, who licensed dapivirine to IPM. And so we are learning as we go and working with many, many different collaborators, including AVAC, options, market managers, lots of different people.
So Zita, what does the European Medicines Agency Article 58 process do for the availability of the ring in Africa? Why is it important to do that part first?
Well, IPM is a nonprofit is not interested in actually marketing the product in places in the world where HIV incidence in women is not a huge public health problem. So our mission is to make this product available in countries where HIV incidence is the highest, and especially in women. That, for us, is sub-Saharan Africa. For most of the sub-Saharan African countries, 39 of 40 of them, do not have their own independent regulatory agencies that can review a dossier of a new chemical entity easily. And so they would like to see WHO's review. And WHO will only review a product that has an approval from what they call a stringent regulatory agency, which includes either FDA or the European Medicines Agency or the Japanese Regulatory Agency, but there are just a few of them. And so that's why we've chosen one of those, the EMA. And we chose the EMA because they have this special process that allows WHO to be a part of the review. And so from our perspective, that saves time. So if the FDA approves it, that's terrific. And then we have to give it over to the WHO. In this case, with EMA, the WHO is part of the process. Mm-hmm. And so theoretically, it should be a more seamless process that should occur more quickly. It's not going to give us a marketing authorization in Europe, which we're not interested in anyway, but it will give us the same exact review, rigorous review, and it will give a scientific opinion of the safety and efficacy of the product.
Excellent. When will we hear back from the EMA?
Sometimes the timelines are not completely predictable, but it is likely that before the end of the year, we will have a scientific opinion from the EMA.
What's the most ambitious timeline you can imagine that a woman in an African city or town where the research happened initially, who sees herself at risk, wants to use a product, can actually access it in a public health system?
My guess that it will be in one of the clinical trial countries, most likely Zimbabwe. Once we have EMA Article 58 opinion and WHO prequalification, it would be sometime in 2019, I think, that women could get access to the ring.
2019, and that's the most ambitious, you think, the earliest we can expect it.
Yes.
So between now, when both the open label extension studies are ending, and that time, is there any other way for women to access the ring?
It's a really good question. There will be a study called REACH, which will be in the field sometime later this year, and it will be for young women. Unfortunately, unless additional resources can be raised, the women who are currently in the open label extensions will be rolling off product by the end of this year. We are doing everything we can to try to raise additional funds because we do believe that women should get access to the ring until regulatory approval or scientific opinion is reached.
So let's talk about the money then. Is there money? Is there enough excitement for this new product? Is there enough support? And if not, what's the reason?
Well, we have really committed donors who have stayed with us from the very beginning. But there are some donors who feel that it is still a risky proposition that this ring will get EMA approval, and they do not want to commit funds until they get the approval. And so we're caught between a rock and a hard place because we do feel that women should be able to stay on the ring until approvals in different countries, but we can't convince the donors otherwise. Some donors are risk averse. Other donors are very committed but have other constraints to their budgets. Once we get a positive scientific opinion, we think other sources of money may open up, and we certainly are poised to go and talk to those donors who haven't supported IPM yet. But there's always, in the nonprofit research world, these gaps in funding right when you need them the most. It just is uncanny how that happens.
Is there a role for your allies, other researchers, advocates, policymakers that can be doing now to shine a light on this and raise more funds?
Yes. I mean, talking to policymakers, especially even in countries that may have some budget of their own, could be a really important process for us. But there's also a fine line between advocating for money and advocating for the ring itself, because the ring is still under regulatory approval. And so we do have to be very careful. We cannot promote the ring. We need to promote money for research still. And then hopefully for access later.
This is actually a really interesting point because, you know, there are lots of women's health activists who have been part of advocacy for the field of microbicides, mm-hmm. who have been actively watching every trial, should we say, and are delighted that there's a product they can finally hold on to. And so the question we get from advocates is, but we help make this happen. So what is our role now, even as we wait for regulatory approval? How do we stay involved? How do we engage others so we don't have a situation like the female condom that ended up on the shelves and we hadn't right. talked about it?
Right. It's a fine line that at least IPM has to walk, and we have to be very careful as the product developer never to overstate. I think that there are missions of many donor countries in all of the countries in which we have worked that oftentimes have different pots of money than do the offices back in the home countries. And I think hearing from women on the ground that this is something they are looking forward to once it is approved could actually help drive the message back to the donor countries. Having that talked up at the country level can, I think, help our committed donors argue within their agencies for more funds.
While investigators like Zita Rosenberg and advocates track the next steps for rolling out the ring, further studies are looking at the thorny question of what kind of HIV prevention tool will actually work for adolescent girls and young women. In the earlier studies, known as Aspire and Ring, younger women were not able to use the ring consistently. One of the new studies looking at this issue is called REACH. Carolyn Akello is heading up the REACH study in Uganda, which is one of the four countries where this study is taking place. The study will have young women try both oral PrEP and the dapivirine ring. Carolyn, help us understand what we will learn from the REACH study.
We know from the Aspire study that even if the ring was found to be efficacious, young women aged 18 to 21 were not, actually there was no efficacy in that age group. And then we also do not know how, especially adolescents, will take up PrEP. So I believe that the REACH study will actually provide us more information about how to equip these young women to use some of these HIV prevention methods better. But also to understand, especially, you know, for the vaginal ring, why was there no efficacy? Was it only adherence, or were there other biological factors that could have affected the efficacy?
So when will this study start, and when will we actually hear these results?
Well, right now we are in the preparatory phases, and I believe that the study will start maybe somewhere around June, July, or August. And hopefully it will end about 2020, and maybe the results will be out in 2021. But we hope that by the time the ring is licensed, at least we'll have some interim data that actually can be used to really be able to determine whether this ring can also be rolled out to adolescents, and young women, especially adolescents aged 16 to 17, who actually really need the ring.
How will this study look and feel different than other studies being done around the ring?
Wow, that is actually very interesting. Well, first and foremost, for the study design, I think really it's one of the best designs that I've seen. Yeah, so in the study, an adolescent or a young woman will be given a chance to actually use both the ring, but also will be given a chance to use PrEP. And they'll use these study products for the first, in a six-month use period. So, and then in the last 6 month use period, they actually get to choose what study product they will actually want to use. So that last product use period will actually enable us to know what their preferences are, whether the ring or PrEP or nothing at all. So I believe, because choice is really a very important issue, especially, in enabling someone a dear better. So I believe that we'll be able to really learn so much information about acceptability of the ring, but also the preferences.
So, Carol, as you think about the start of this study, what are the challenges that you have your eye on in terms of either recruiting for the study or retaining or talking to the community about it? Do you think are some of the particular challenges about a study with young people?
One of the challenges I foresee is recruiting, especially the 16 to 17-year-olds, because these are considered minors. And actually, from the REACH protocol, they need parental or guardian consent, because we cannot waiver this since this the Dapivirine vaginal ring has not yet been licensed. It's still a new, an investigational product. So that was really one of the issues, because in our African cultures, many times issues dealing with sex and sexuality are things that are private. You know, they're not talked about in the, you know, open domain. So discussing such issues with a parent or a guardian would really be a little bit difficult for the minor to bring it up. And yet, really, this is something that we have to have. You know, we have to have a parent or a guardian to be able to actually be in the consent process and know what exactly is happening. So that is one challenge I foresee. We might have difficulty recruiting the 16 to 17-year-olds. So it is a challenge, but we are seeing how to sort this out with information from the community and different stakeholders. Another issue that I foresee is maybe retention, because many times these minors are not, they're dependent on different family members, yes. So we have to really ensure that, you know, we keep close contact with them so that we do not lose them out, yeah. We envisage actually getting young health visitors and community educators and maybe home visits, and we're trying to see how to mitigate that.
So in the discussions that you've been having with young people or with community members and guardians, are you seeing any difference or hearing any difference to PrEP, oral PrEP versus the Dapivirine ring as an intervention?
Many times when we discuss this, when initially they see the ring, they're like, oh, that's a big, it's really big, you know. But then when we discuss a little bit about it and how to insert it and how other women have actually used it, and when they also hear testimonies from other ring users, they're like, okay, it is something that we may use. But then from the outset, they seem to prefer PrEP to the Dapivirine vaginal ring. But that's what we want to really find out in the study, to see what actually would they prefer, PrEP or the vaginal ring.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Carolyn. I really appreciate your time, and good luck with the study.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
No matter how safe and effective a drug might be, it's useless if women can't make it fit into their lives. Ruth, and we're not using her full name to respect her confidentiality, is a recent college graduate, leader of women's forums in her village, a mother of three, and happens to be a participant in the ring trials. She's been sharing her experience of using the ring with researchers at scientific forums. She was a trial participant in the Aspire study in Uganda, and then in the open label extension study, Hope. Ruth, why did you join these trials?
Because I thought that it would be the only opportunity, one of the opportunities actually, but that is what we have so far, of a female controlled HIV prevention method, like the ring. Yeah, because there are several other methods, but now this is a method that will be controlled by a female. So I was like, if this works, it will really work. So I gained much interest in it, and I was like, let me see how we can make it work.
Was it a decision that you made easily when you first heard the information, or did it take you a while from the first time you heard the information to decide that you wanted to be a participant?
Actually, it took me a while. I cannot tell you it was an easy decision. I was breastfeeding then, so I was thinking about how I was going to stop breastfeeding my baby.
That's right. The trial wasn't open to breastfeeding women because researchers still don't know enough yet about how much drug could get into breast milk or the possible effects of it. So women who were pregnant or breastfeeding couldn't join the trial.
My baby was 1 year and 6 months. So I was like, I would breastfeed her to 2 years and a half or maybe three. And I was like, how am I going to go about this? So I had to think about my baby and come back to the cause of the fight against HIV. So it was not easy. I thought about it for quite a long time, even a month and a half with mixed decisions, mm-hmm. until finally I made over and I was like, let me stop breastfeeding, let me start the struggle. We have to fight HIV.
And what has it meant to you to be part of this research?
It has really meant a lot to me. It has meant a lot to me personally and even generally, not only personally, because in relation to the research, apart from personal matters, I feel so big, you know. Someone who took part in a study to prove an important fact to prove an important tool. I feel so happy about it.
Yeah. Ruth, what's your background? You seem to understand research really well. Did you have training in research, or was the were the trial team really good in explaining what was actually happening in this trial?
I did not have training before. I had even taken a long period of time without going back to school. But the research team, the study team was good. They answered every question. And I think most of the information, I got it out of my curiosity, because I had a lot of questions then. I wanted to know, you know, health things, you can't just get into it and you're like, let me start it. You have to know its effects. You have to know everything. You have to know how it is. You have to have a touch, feel. The questions were a lot. And I believe that when you ask a lot, you get a lot of information. When you disclose a lot, you get a lot of information. So I have built up that information for these past 4 years that I've been in the study.
Was it easy for you to keep the ring in, to make the decision not to take it out, to adhere to what they were telling you to do?
It was actually not easy at first. I remember my first ring. I can never forget it. Because I was like, I looked at the size and I was like, oh, this ring, this big thing. How will I put it on for all this time? What is the fiber that makes it? Mm-hmm. I was like, how am I going to go about with it? But through my own physical tests, like pinching it, you know, those physical tests you do when you're alone, I got a lot of confidence in it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, after 2 weeks, it has not changed size, it has not changed odor, it has not changed color. So I think it must not have a big problem. Yeah, so I was then adjusted to it. With time went on, I even forgot that I had a ring in me.
So what would you say made it easy to get used to it? Is it just because you didn't feel it, or is it because of what you were thinking about it? What made it easy to adhere to it, to keep it in?
First of all, according to what information I've gathered from the research personnel, I think it's not risky. Secondly, it's not painful. So I first listened and felt myself. I jumped around and I had to move long distances and feel if I could feel anything. But, well, I didn't feel anything. So thirdly, my partner didn't feel it. And then the last thing is disclosure. I used to talk everything with the research people, with the study staff. And I would ask them a lot and tell them how I felt, and they would give me assurance.
So Ruth, you know, the one thing we've heard about is that actually it was difficult for some women to keep the ring in. They couldn't adhere. So, you know, you talked a lot about, you know, participants talk to each other. What were some of the reasons, you know, some of the other women said that they decided not to or couldn't keep using the ring?
Actually, participants talk to each other. Because they know you're going through the same. And most of them confided in me. They were like, you know what, Ruth, for me, I don't use it. They're like, I'm scared of telling the personnel, the medical staff, that I don't use it. And yet I don't want to lose the benefits of the study. The major reasons they gave me was like they didn't trust the product, which was very normal because it was a study. So we receive information, we process information differently. One might refuse absolutely and stay in denial, no, no, no. Another one may say, let's try it. Another one may say, I'm going for it. And others were like, for me, I just want the benefits. So some of those were the reasons as to why some of them didn't use it.
What about fear of their partner finding out? Was that any of the reasons people gave?
Yeah, actually, many of them told me that. The first day we all took the rings, we were all scared, you know, taking each other's numbers. And you're like, when the partner comes, please beep me and call me and tell me what happened. Yeah, so they were all scared at the time. But when we got to know that they don't feel the rings, then that was not a problem anymore. Yeah.
You know, yesterday when you gave your presentation, you spoke so beautifully about this being your secret. Can you tell us a little bit about that again? Tell us that story.
The secret. Yeah, I didn't actually tell anybody that I'm using it.
But you also said that you felt proud that you had this secret. I was very interested when you said that.
The pride in having the secret is that you are away from stigma. Mm-hmm. So I was so happy about it. I was contented because I was living my life with my ring. You know, I call it my ring. Yeah, and my secret. So until when I thought that maybe when it is proven to be effective, I would tell them and invite them. I'm like, you know what, I took part in this. But now it's effective, so no one will say you did about you. How did you? Why did you? Yeah, they will be like, we need to join you.
Thank you so much, Ruth. I love talking to you. I wish you the best of luck in everything you touch.
Thanks a lot. I really enjoyed it. It was a very good conversation.
You've been listening to PX Pulse, a regular podcast bringing you fresh voices on critical issues facing HIV prevention research today.